Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. This episode of Real Turf Techs on Golf Course Industries Superintendent Radio Network is presented by Foley Company, a strong supporter of equipment technicians and golf course maintenance departments everywhere. Foley Company offers a proven solution for above and below the turf, for turf professionals everywhere. To learn more about Foley Company's line of reel grinders, bed knife grinders, and the Air2 G2 family of products, or to find a distributor, visit www.foleyco.com. Foley, ready for play. Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, episode 101. Today we're talking to Jeff Drake, Global Product Marketing Manager at the Toro Company. Jeff has been at the Toro Company for 32 years. Let's talk to Jeff. Welcome, Jeff, to the Real Turf Techs Podcast. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, Trent. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Honored. No, I'm really looking forward to this. And we've known each other for some time. Not that we talk that often, but it was good to reconnect last year. And you had me and Chad and Austin Wright come by and visit you at Toro Company. And I really appreciate you sending out an invitation and having me up for that. And I look forward to our conversation today.
As do I, and thanks for reaching out on that visit. I was tickled when you reached out and dragging Austin and Chad. It couldn't have gone any better. I appreciated it, and hopefully you got as much out of it as I did.
Oh, yeah. The soundproof room. I know we can't talk about all the stuff we saw. Hopefully that's not off limits, but that was so eerie, being in a soundproof room.
It does scare you a little bit, because you can start to hear your blood going through and your heartbeat, and other creepy thoughts start creeping in, because it's the absence of ambient noise around you. Mm-hmm. Your brain kind of struggles to process without all that ambient noise. It's really weird.
Yeah, it was obviously, I've never been in silence before. Even, you know, I might be in the woods and think, oh, this is so peaceful and silent, but it is nowhere near silent.
Yeah, it's an experience, and I've done multiple tours like that, and I haven't had anybody that's been in that for the first time feel comfortable, because
right,
that absence of ambient noise, and because it's in our everyday lives and everything we do. Like you said, you're in the woods and you think you're in peace and quiet. You still got all the wind noise, just the noise around you.
Right. Yeah. I didn't realize how much noise was around me until I walked in that room, and there's none. So that's super cool. And I really appreciate you having us up. But tell us how you got into the turf industry.
So my introduction to the turf industry started at the age of 13. I was looking for a summer job. And growing up, I probably lived 2 miles from two different golf courses. Both of them were private country clubs. And I rode my bike up to one of them and said, I'd like to be a caddy. And okay. So I started my my now 39 years in golf as a caddy on the, I'll call it the front end of the house at the clubhouse, carrying bags for members.
Awesome. That's so cool.
And then that evolved into, you know, picking the driving range, working the bag room, cleaning carts, to then working in the pro shop, opening and closing the pro shop in the morning and the evenings. The country club, they couldn't get rid of me. So in the winters, I was working in the dining room, waiting tables, valet parking cars for clubhouse events, weddings, you name it. And then the next spring came around and I was doing it all again.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. Did you work in the grounds department any?
So I never worked in the grounds department, and working it at the, on the golf side of operations, always, you know, kind of have been a mechanically inclined person. I ended up being our liaison with the grounds department. We had a fleet of 40 at that time, you know, gas carts. Mm-hmm. And when we'd have events, we would need all 40, yet we'd have five of them sitting broken down. I was the guy running out to the maintenance shop to get a bag of tools to bring the carts back to life so we could put them all into the rental fleet for the event. And, you know, created a really good relationship with the grounds department, but was always working on the front end of the house.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that can definitely be a struggle at clubs I've seen over the years, that sometimes, yeah, those two departments don't play nice together, if you will. And yep. It just makes the whole environment a lot worse for all of us when that gets set up. So if you got a good director of agronomy and a good director of golf and they get along together, life is so good.
Yeah, it was a really good relationship with both the grounds department. When they'd come up to the clubhouse, I'd be their check-in point. And, you know, do we need anything? Are things running? Is the range picker up? Is the range picker down? And to the point where when the maintenance crew would go do summer events, I'd get invited with them to go tubing down the river, you know, have the barbecue. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Very cool.
You know, I was an extension of them at the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. So young Jeff working at the country club, how does he go to school? And
that's a great question. Step? And that caddy history, one of the pros who I worked under, it was a female pro. She came over from the neighboring club, the other one that was nearby, which had a really good caddy program. And the club I was at didn't have the best caddy program, so that's why I went there. So I knew I could get loops. You know, I didn't have to wait 4 hours to get a bag.
Mm-hmm.
She introduced me to a caddy scholarship, and it's called the Evans Scholarship, which is my shameless plug, managed by the Western Golf Association, the WGA. And she introduced me to it and said, basically, you're eligible with your history of caddying and your hours and your academics, your community service. We just have to get you to apply and then get your letters of recommendation.
Okay.
So Kathy Bremer was her name. She was basically my mentor to get me into the interview process for the scholarship. And then after that, the rest is history. So, the Evans Scholarship provided me with a 4-year renewable college scholarship. Then at that point, I didn't really have a good direction of what I was going to do in college. But going into the interview process, I had to have determined a school and a major. So it kind of forced my hand. And at that time, like I said, you know, I was mechanically inclined. I loved tinkering, or as Aaron Miller called it, you know, piddling.
Yeah, piddling. That's awesome.
And I went into mechanical engineering and proceeded into engineering. And then that opened my eyes to a program at the University of Minnesota where I got my degree. It was a co-op program. And that co-op program allowed you to integrate your schooling with a company and industry and alternate going to school and then working and going to school. And so the way it would work is you'd get a list of companies, and then over spring break, you'd interview with them, and then you would rate the company you wanted to work for. And then the companies would rank their candidates of who they interviewed with. And then the program would kind of align them, you know, if the student was a number one and the company had them as a number one, it was a direct match. If the student was a five and the company had them as a two, you know, they would kind of link companies and students up.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the Toro company was on the company list, but they weren't on the interview list. And so I asked the program, said, you know, why is Toro not on there? And they said, well, their position, they have a student already and he's in his second year, so they don't need another student. I said, okay. I interviewed with companies, made my selection, got a good fit. And it was the week before finals. I called the company and said, hey, I haven't heard anything about my start date for summer, just trying to coordinate things with finals coming up next week. And the woman who I got a hold of wasn't my contact. And her comment was, oh yeah, we've been meaning to get a hold of you. We've gone through some cuts and we're not going to use you.
Wow.
And my heart just sank because I went out on a limb with this company. I had a direct lock at another one, but I'm like, I'm going to take a little risk. And and now it's the week before finals. And I walk into the office and said, well, I got bad news. Here's what I heard. Are there any companies that didn't get students? The woman handed me the list and I looked at it and go, yeah, I interviewed with them. I know why they didn't get a student. And then at the bottom of the list was Toro ? And I inquired, I said, hey, what's the deal with Toro on here? They weren't interviewing. And the woman came back and said, well, their student dropped out of the program, changed his major, but our contact at Toro is out of the country and we're waiting on an answer if they want a student.
Wow.
And I just lit up and I said, I want to be that student. And this was before cell phones. So the contact was out of the country. They were waiting for him to get back. He got back. I had an interview, started a week later, and the rest is history.
Wow. That is awesome. So how long have you been with Toro?
It was 32 years earlier this year. So over 32 years.
Well, congratulations. That's very impressive. And you're not that old. For the listeners that can't see your face, I'm not going to ask how old you are, but you're not that old. So that's a long time to be there at the Toro company. Yeah, that is awesome. So let's go through some of your different roles there. So you started in engineering.
Yeah, I started in engineering right out of college. Well, I was in college doing that work study program. Got my degree, got hired on full-time as a product engineer. Some of the products I worked, irony of things, is I started on riding greens mowers and then transitioned to sand pros, bunker rakes, and then really spent the majority of my time in five-plex fairway mowers.
Okay.
And that led me up till, well, I did one rotary amongst that, but it was off of the five-plex fairway mower platform. The last engineering project was the Reelmaster 5010H. And at that point, I needed a change of scenery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had spent at that time about 20 years in engineering. I loved customer engagement and helping hear problems and deliver products to help them solve their agronomic and kind of golf course issues. So I knew there was an opening in our sales group and kind of reached out just informally to ask if we could talk about the position. And our national sales manager at the time said, well, if you're interested in this position, my search process is done. And I got back in the office the next day, our director of engineering came over and said, so I hear you're going to sales. And I looked at him and I said, I didn't even interview. I just inquired. And he said, well, it sounds like the job is yours.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did a stint as a district sales manager, managing parts of 13 different states, 5 different Canadian provinces on the western edge, and did that for about 5 years and I look at the spectrum as engineering is very product related, sales is very customer related. Then I got inquired about a product management position and said, would you be interested in doing this? And product management fits right in between engineering and sales. You're working with both teams. I've had experience with both, and that's what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. So I'm a product manager for our riding greens, our walking greens, and our Greens Pro greens rollers as well.
Okay. So what is your day-to-day like managing those projects?
Day-to-day life is a variety of things, working with engineering on current products, answering customer and distributor questions about configuration, or, you know, they're seeing something in the turf and they want help addressing it, both from our distributors or our customers, evaluating markets for new product development.
Mm-hmm.
Every day is different. You know, there's no 2 days are the same.
It almost sounds like working at a golf course.
It is.
I mean, honestly, and, you know, I mean, everybody I've interviewed that's worked at a golf course, I mean, that's why we love it so much, is all the variety that we get to do.
You know, I leave the house in the morning thinking, you know, mindset of, I'd like to get these 5 things done today. And I get to the office, open my email or check my mailbox, and those 5 things just get thrown to the wind, and now I'm doing a deep dive into something else.
Yeah, no, I mean, that honestly is exactly what we do at the golf course, because I get my whole day planned out on my way to work, and 5 minutes into my day, plan's gone. You know, because whatever the circumstance is, whether it's weather or a piece of equipment is not running like it's supposed to, or the boss had, this is a true story, the boss had a greens committee meeting last night, and they decided we're going to take down 30 trees behind number 8 green. The true story just happened, just found out about it today. So it's time to get the chipper hooked up, the dump trailer hooked up, you know, make sure all the chainsaws are sharpened while we're supposed to aerify next week. So that was my day today. And I got to get equipment from one golf course, which we aerified last week, to the golf course we're aerifying next week, and get it all back together and ready to go. So fun times. But yeah. I love that part about not knowing what you're going to do, and every day is different.
I often tell people, I feel like the guy in the circus who's got the plates on sticks and he's trying to keep them all spinning. Mm-hmm. And as soon as one starts wobbling, he's got to run over there and get that one back in sync. And, you know, because it might be the engineering team, it might be the test team, it might be our customer service, it might be our training team. You know, it might be a distributor that wants some information for training that they're doing in their region. And we're doing it on a global scale. And so it's looking around and determining which plate is wobbling the most to give it run, you know, give it some attention and give it another spin.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great way to explain it. I love it. Well, tell us what your favorite tool is. I'm interested to hear.
So my favorite tool's got to be my Milwaukee M18 impact driver.
Oh, I love it. Yes. Right. Like the old Tim the Toolman Taylor.
You know, I just look at it going, man, I remember trying to drive screws in a piece of wood with a screwdriver. Or, you know, trying to loosen a bolt or get out a stripped screw. And now it's like, that's the first thing I go for.
No, I think it's really changed our industry, all the electric tools that's available now. And I know I got guys working in the shop and they think the air hose is for putting air in a tire. You know, they've never used a pneumatic tool. And it's like, that's what I grew up on. Yeah, and one day I'm using electric half-inch impact, and they're like, I can't do what I need to do because I need that impact. And I'm like, there's a pneumatic one in the toolbox. I don't know how to use that. Like, okay, well, I'll give you a little lesson here, buddy. we'll get it figured out. But yeah, I think it's really changed a lot, and it's so much easier not having to drag a hose around everywhere, all in your way. I love
it. Yeah, I mean, I use it for carpentry work, for construction work, for mechanic work. I mean, the thing, I like it so much, I've got a couple of them now, so I don't have to make sure I've got one at each location.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So you got multiple locations?
Well, so I've got one at home, and then we've got a up north cabin.
Is that a pretty common thing? Because I think Chad's got something similar going on.
Yeah, I'd say in the Midwest, it's not uncommon to have a family cabin, a friend's cabin. Cabin country is a big deal.
That's awesome. So, yeah, what's the biggest pastime in cabin country?
Being on the water.
Okay.
You know, just spending time on the water. If it's floating, tubing, skiing, wakeboarding, relaxing, watching a sunset.
Yep, yep. All good
whatever.
Stuff. Yeah. Well, you kind of spoke to, you had one mentor that helped you get your scholarship. You got any other mentors throughout the years?
Yeah, I guess outside of the head pro helping me with the scholarship, I look at everybody in the golf industry is a mentor to me, because you know when I stop listening and learning, then I've given up. You know, everybody's gonna be able to teach me something. I don't know everything, and everybody's doing something a little different. You know, you guys are doing it day in and day out. I'm not living it. And so I look at everybody as really someone I look forward to spending time with to help me help them make better product.
Oh, I agree 100%. And yeah, anybody could be a mentor, and everybody that I've hung out with or got to spend, you know, even a small amount of time in their shop doing whatever, you learn something. And like you said, we're all doing it, and we all do it a little bit different, and some ways are better than others, and you just have to find out what works for you. Or that's been my experience.
Yeah, so you know, Chad Brown over at Town and Country over in St. Paul, I cherish the days when I can go and spend some time with him in the shop, and you know, it's usually working on a piece of equipment or evaluating something or figuring, you know, where his pain points are. Austin Wright over at Sand Valley, Lanny Togi over at St. Andrews, Fred Hartenstein and
oh, yeah.
John
yeah.
Adams and the guy at Augusta National. You know, we've spent a lot of time in the shop with them. You know, we're all learning something together.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that was probably, I mean, one of the funnest parts about working for Jerry Pate and the distributor, and that's how we originally met, was you were doing some testing on was it 5510, I think?
Yeah.
It was. And I mean, that was so cool being, you know, experiencing that and seeing what you're doing, trying to figure that stuff out. And I thoroughly enjoyed it for sure.
Yeah, it's mutually beneficial. You know, I look at it as the customer's helping me evaluate and prove out a product so we can make it better for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then spending the time in the shop, you know, I like to hear the goods and the bads of the product and the service aspect, because I look at our product is we don't design it to be in the shop, spending time in there. However, I also want to take pride in, we know it's going to have to be there for general repair and maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on making the time that it is there as efficient as possible so we can get it back out onto the turf for what it's meant to be doing, cutting grass.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know why I'm thinking about it this way, but the thing I like working on the least is a tool. So, you know, whatever it is, if, you know, I don't like working on tools because I need that tool to perform a job, and I don't need to be working on the tool. But I've never really thought about it this way. I mean, it's the same way with the mower. We need the mower mowing grass. We don't need to be working on it in the shop because it needs to be mowing grass. But, and I don't care what color it is, it all breaks.
Yep.
I mean, everything. There's wear points, you know, whatever it is. You don't do like Chad and you're not up to date on all your preventive maintenance stuff. Spending time with him, that was the most amazing thing when me and Austin went over there. I mean, just to see his operation, how clean everything is. And he's so thorough. And he's in our WhatsApp group too. And somebody will throw a question up, and most of the time, he doesn't answer the question without answering the question with an operator, service, or parts manual. Like, he has all that stuff, says, you need to look here. And it's just so awesome knowing somebody like that. And he's a huge resource for our whole industry, not just, you know, for the people in the group. And I think a lot of us are that way. We just want to help. So yep. If the guy down the road has an issue, maybe we've seen it, maybe we hadn't, but we're all very willing to help in any way we can.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's about being more efficient in, you know, maybe it's diagnosing something or finding a resolution to resolve it, get it out of the shop and get it back out to, you know, if it's an aerator, get it back out to aerate or a top dresser or a mower. It's not doing anybody any good sitting in there disabled and non-functional.
Right. Yep. Exactly right. Well, yeah, I'll tell this quick story. So I was talking about moving equipment between courses. I went to load up a tractor and the ramp slid and the tractor back tire, I was loading it forwards. The back tire goes down and I'm like, you know, this sucks, whatever. So I'm backing up and I see diesel fuel pouring everywhere. It has a plastic fuel tank right under the seat. I knocked a hole in it trying to load it on the trailer. So I pull it in the shop, get the fuel out of it, take the fuel tank off, and I got a plastic welder. I welded it back up, put it back in, still got it delivered that same day. I mean, it's just amazing what the right tool at the right time can do. And granted, that should have never happened. I should have had the ramps probably a little bit wider. I should have had somebody spotting me, you know, I mean, whatever. It probably could have been prevented, but it wouldn't. And anyway, so the boss, he was surprised to see it on the trailer because he'd seen the hole was knocked in the tank. And he went to lunch or, you know, went and done whatever. And he comes back and it's sitting on the trailer. And he's like, you got that fixed? It's like, yeah, I got it fixed. So I told him, you know, what I did. And he said, that one tool saved aerification. You know, and I never really thought about it like that. But a technician and the right tools could save aerification.
Having the right tool saves a lot of things.
Yeah. I'm definitely a tool junkie. And I know this. I've struggled with it over the years. I do have hoarding tendencies. So it's tough. But yeah, if they make a tool for the job, I want that tool. You know, why not? It just makes life so much easier. And I might have even told this story, but if I hadn't, hopefully Corey Phillips will laugh along with us. I asked it. This is, you know, when I first started there at Jerry Payton, getting to know Corey, and I don't remember what we were working on, but we needed a pair of snap ring pliers. And I said, you got snap ring pliers? And he's like, I got two screwdrivers. I said, okay, Corey. All right. So we get the snap ring off. I was like, have you ever thought about getting a pair of snap ring pliers? And he says, oh, the ones I've got, they just don't work. I was like, well, you got to buy a decent pair. That's not something you go to Harbor Freight and get. You get, you know, a good set of snap ring pliers and they'll serve you well.
Because all you need is one of those snap rings to let loose. And then we all listen for it. Where's the last time I heard it go ping?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're, you know, on the floor looking for a snap ring underneath a bench or in a pile of clippings somewhere. That's just inefficient. It's a waste. It's time we don't have.
No, that's exactly right. And who knows where that snap ring goes? I think maybe it goes to outer space because it will just disappear, you know, and it doesn't matter how clean your shop is or whatever. I mean, you know how it is around equipment.
Yeah.
There's all kind of nooks and crannies and it's going to find one and you'll never see it again.
It's like dropping a bolt, you know, underneath the seat or under the hood. You hear it ting, 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 and you're praying that you hear it hit the concrete floor.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it hits the concrete floor, you've just increased your chances of finding it tenfold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
Instead of being embedded in a frame or sitting on a exhaust manifold somewhere that you now can't even get to.
That's funny. A buddy of mine was telling me he was changing a window regulator on some kind of old like E30 BMW or something. And you got to stick a 10 millimeter socket through a little bitty hole and to get it loose. And anyway, and he puts the new one in, he pulls his extension out with the 10 millimeter socket on it and it catches on the side of the hole. 10 millimeter socket goes down inside the door.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So he gets his magnet out. He's digging around. He pulls out a 10 millimeter socket and it's not his.
There's another one in there.
Yeah, there was another one in there. So somebody else had performed the same job and left their 10 millimeter socket in there.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So he got somebody else's 10 millimeter socket out and said, okay, I got my socket or I got a socket. So there's still one riding around in that door.
Oh, he didn't go fishing for his own?
No, he didn't go fishing for his own. I think it was a cheaper brand maybe. So he just left it in there. He had his 10 millimeter socket.
That's funny. I'm trying to think of Daniel Heinze. Wasn't he the one that would go magnet fishing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so cool. I hadn't tried that yet, but it sounds interesting.
I've had to go magnet fishing for tools and hardware.
And so the lake?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Has this got a good story with it?
No.
No. Okay. All right.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. No good stories there.
So when I heard Daniel talking about that, I was like, oh, I can relate to that.
That's awesome. That's well, I appreciate you being a listener and a guest. This is awesome. So tips and tricks.
You know, tips and tricks, I'd say that is, I've got a long history of a lot of products. I don't have one that sticks out. You know, they're probably conditional. Yeah, I can't think of one that sticks out as, you know, that's something that was really beneficial because it's, you know, from one guy might be, or gal might be, yep, I just had to learn that last week, where the next person is, oh, I never knew that.
Well, you know, right. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, with this tip and trick segment, you know, you never know what you're going to get. There's so many good tricks out there and there's a lot of good tips out there, but you don't know what you don't know. So always love hearing people's story to that.
I guess I've turned into, even before I start a project now, first thing I'm doing is going on YouTube to find out, okay, i.e., what's the tip and trick that's out there that I don't have to learn? Or before I even start the project, well, I'm going to watch this 5-minute video and figure out, do I have all the tools? So I'd say if I have a tip or trick, go check YouTube or the WhatsApp to figure out who else out there has had this issue and, you know, save you the 10-15 minutes on the diagnostic side of it.
No, that's a great point. And so I'm working on a Honda Civic and I've been working on Hondas for a long time, but I was watching a video on YouTube about how to remove the cylinder head. And because I've never taken one off this particular Honda, so why not go to YouTube and get some insight? And the first thing I see blows my mind. On this Honda, and I think several other Hondas, they're, you know, the hood doesn't have shocks, so it's got a mount, right? So you pop the hood up, and it's got a rod that holds the hood up.
Sure.
There's two holes in the hood. I never knew about the second hole. So the first hole is like for checking your oil or whatever you're doing, but if you're actually going to do a little more work on the engine, there's another hole that holds the hood more vertical.
Like a service position.
Yeah, like a service position. Exactly right. And I was like, how did I never see this before? So, I mean, you know, it's just little simple stuff like that. And I would have never learned that if I hadn't have been watching a video on YouTube.
Well, it's funny you say that. Is last weekend, I found a little black plastic knob with a T-slot in it. And I asked my wife, I said, hey, do you know what this is from? And rather than throw it away, I put it on my dresser. And a week later, when I went to open the back hatch of my Tahoe, the window, it's got a soft rubber button that you depress right next to the license plate to open the window.
Okay.
So I put my hand under there and wait a minute, the rubber bumper's gone. So I look underneath and there's a slot in a round opening. And so I went back inside, grabbed that plastic piece, slid it in there, pushed it, and the window opened. I'm like, okay, I knew where this came from. And what had happened is the rubber pad had dry rotted. You know, vehicle's 14 years old, it dry rotted, and I must have slammed the window and it finally just dropped out. And unfortunately, I didn't find the pad part of it because that broke in pieces. But the plunger, so now I've got the plunger in my glove compartment. If I ever need to open the window, I grab it, push it, and put it away.
That's awesome.
The other night, I went on YouTube to figure out how do I get the switch out. And sure enough, you know, you've got to take the door apart from the inside to get the outside license plate frame off, and then you can get access to the switch.
Okay, yeah. I don't, especially automotive stuff. There's so many videos on there. All, you know, just little, you know, how do you change this light bulb that you have no idea how you get, you think you got to disassemble the whole dash panel, you know, to change a light bulb. And maybe you do, but at least in those videos, you can kind of find out what you're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can also tell you, there's a lot of them that I haven't followed the instructions, you know. Same vehicle, Chevy Tahoe, or better yet, a Chevy Malibu, where you've got to take the front clip off, bumper, and fascia to get to the headlight. You know, and that's where I just say shame on GM for making it really assembly easy and customer unfriendly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
and
it all.
That's how engineers get a bad name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is doing stuff like that. Where you got to disassemble the whole car to change the headlight bulb.
Yeah. So now I've found out that a couple 2x4s properly positioned, I can get my arm, hold it open to where I can get my arm in and only have to take a couple clips out.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do it in the middle of a Minnesota winter, though.
Oh, yeah. Imagine not.
Because you will crack the plastic.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
A nice
the things we do not have to worry about down here in the South.
Yeah. Yeah. Pluses and minuses.
That's right. Pluses and minuses. Y'all have a lot more minuses up there, in my opinion, than pluses, including the temperature being negative degrees.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about volunteering a little bit. You got quite a bit of experience volunteering at some major tournaments.
Yeah. So, you know, in my role, I get to visit a lot of golf courses and, you know, I'm there for a limited amount of time. So I've been able to volunteer at, it's going on probably 30 plus different events, you know, local events all the way up to, well, you know, I call it my personal grand slam. I've done all the majors, including Ryder Cups. In that, and it gives me the opportunity to spend time in the shop, out on the golf course with superintendents in, I'll say, a different environment and walk in their shoes and share both positive and negative experiences to, again, help me learn and be more of a help in our product development process. Mm-hmm. Rather than showing up for 5 minutes, we have a conversation and I only take away from that 5 minutes. You know, as a volunteer, you're there at oh dark 30, 4 or 5 in the morning. And many times you're not leaving the facility till 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So you're with those folks day in and day out. Issues come up during the course of the week that you've got to react and get that piece of equipment back out or deal with that situation. And it's a huge benefit from a learning experience. You know, I do it as much as I can. However, you know, it is away from my day-to-day job. So I got to pick and choose when I can, but hugely rewarding, huge social aspect and networking aspect. Because as you and I know, you know, we 20, 30 years ago kind of started our relationship and it was tied to, you know, my opportunity to create a relationship with the golf course that we were out testing at.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible how that works. And I mean, I think we talk about it a lot, but I think it needs to be talked about a lot is the power of networking. And for me, I think volunteering is a big network opportunity. Not that you don't learn a lot of other stuff working with another mechanic, like we talked about. We're all doing the same thing. We all do it a little different. And we do learn different tips and tricks, and everybody does it different. And there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, as the old saying goes. And I love volunteering. And like you say, the social aspect of it and hanging out, getting to know people a little bit better, get to find out what makes them tick and find out what kind of food they like, because I love to eat. It just makes the world go around, I think.
Yeah, you're learning different cultures, you know, different parts of the world, different parts of the country, different grass types. Bermudas and the Zoysias, they don't do too well up north here. So, you know, I've got to travel to do testing in those environments. And I can't tell you how many relationships through volunteering or connections that have blossomed outside of the volunteering aspect that both ways, you know, they wanted some answers or wanted some help. And I've been able to maybe lean on them for something at times. And it just, it opens the world up.
No, it really does. And yeah, it's a two-way street. You know, I'm getting something, you're getting something. And I think, you know, at least my experience in volunteering, I always end up, or I feel like I get way more than I gave to volunteer for a few days or however long it is.
Oh, heck yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, you take that time aspect and then by the time you get back and address all the things that happened while you're gone and you have a chance to decompress and process all that, you know, went on during your time when you were there, it's just the teeter totter never flips back. Your gained never has a chance to balance out what you know you put in, because you get so much.
Yeah. Well, and I think you hit on a really good tip there of taking a minute and reflecting on what you did, whether it's going to volunteer. Or I personally did this last week after the biggest part of our air vacation was over. I was in the shop and the other mechanic there, I said, let's just talk about what all happened. You know, a little like after actions report, if you will, nothing formal, but just talk through it. Like, you know, this went really good. You know, we had some issues with this. And I wrote all that stuff down and what we've done historically is we do a report, aerification report every year. And we take all these notes, write all that down. And then next year we read that report. So we don't make the same mistakes we made this year, next year. And I just think that's very valuable to do stuff like that. But if you do go volunteer, take a few minutes by yourself and reflect on what all you did learn and what you need to follow up on. And I've said this in the last few interviews because I learned it from Greg Womble. He's a technician in the Carolinas. And he said, we are really good at coming up with ideas and we suck at follow through. And I know me personally, I'm terrible on the follow through. So that's something I need to work on. And I think a lot of us need to work on it.
Yeah. One thing I learned, one of my first volunteer events is I found just a small little pocket notepad and, you know, something I could just slip in my pocket and make a note here, there, follow up on, get back to someone, or, you know, write down someone's contact information. And, you know, I do it every time when I go to visit a customer. I'll bring a bigger notepad, but, you know, I just say, give me a minute. I want to collect this thought. So, I don't lose it and forget.
Yeah, because it happens so easily. And I know, you know, with us being in the shop and you got 100 things coming at you and you have this one thought and then you get interrupted. And if you didn't write that thought down, I don't know when it's going to come back to you. You know, but maybe it will later that day. It might be a week. It might be a month. Or it might not ever come back. Or, yeah, I don't know what happened to me, but we have a top changer. And so it's like the wet jet, if you will, instead of a dry jet. It's a wet jet. And a great machine. But if you have any rocks or gravel or any of that kind of stuff in your sand that you put into it, it will get hung in the nozzles. So evidently this didn't get in our report because I totally forgot that I even made it, but I made a tool to hook up to a water hose so I could reverse the sand, you know, goes one direction. This, I mean, it isn't anything. It's a 90 and a nipple and I can blow the rocks out with it.
It's a back and flush.
Yeah, a back flush. And I totally forgot that I made the thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm losing it. I don't know. But I totally forgot. And I find it on the shelf, of course, after we already did one aerification. But I got it for the next week. So we're going to be good to go. You ready to do some rapid fire questions?
Heck yeah, let's go.
All right. What's your favorite movie?
Do you have to ask? Caddyshack, of course.
Oh, okay. Caddyshack. Yes, I love it, man. I don't know, out of everybody I've interviewed, I can't remember anybody saying Caddyshack. And it's such a great movie. And I know some superintendents think, you know, because it makes the superintendent look bad. But it is what it is, and it's a really good movie.
It's a classic.
What would be your last meal?
Well, that's going to have to be a filet cooked medium with a little bit of garlic butter on top, maybe a twice baked loaded potato, some grilled asparagus. We'll finish that off with a little vanilla bean ice cream and maybe a berry compote on top.
Wow. All right. I want to be there for your last meal. That's
I'm
great.
Hungry now.
Yeah, I know. So what are you most proud of besides your family?
You know, besides family, you know, I'll go back to our cabin. You know, we always had this dream of having somewhere just to get away. And I said it earlier, kind of decompress. And, you know, it hasn't been easy. It's not done. But, you know, we've got it to the point where we can go and get away and just relax and kind of put the stress of the week behind us.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. Very good.
And we love sharing it with others and just saying, let's take it for what it is.
Well, I'm going to keep that in mind next time I'm up there in the summertime. See if we can go stay at your cabin.
You're invited. But if you want to come during the winter, you know, we can have fun there too. We might put a shovel in your hand though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Too much shoveling for me. Don't y'all have snow blowers and stuff too?
We do.
Yeah.
We might have multiple ways we can move snow.
All right. Yes. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. I've really enjoyed this. I appreciate you being a guest. If any of the listeners wanted to reach out to you, you got an email address or anything you'd share?
Yeah, I guess. Well, are you going to put it in your closing? Otherwise, I can give my email address, both my work and my personal, jtdrake325@gmail.com or jeff.drake@toro.com.
All right. Awesome. Very good. Well, thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, Trent, it's been my pleasure. In closing, congratulations again on your Edwin Boning Award. I know that's something to be proud of. Some of my predecessors here and my peers in the industry that I've known over the years were recipient of that. Most recently, Helmut Ulrich, right before you. And then, you know, Dana Lon, Hector Velasquez, Jim Nedden, and the late Vali Kaur, you know, all friends of mine that have been recipients. So again, congratulations. That's something to be proud of.
Thank you very much. I'm so humbled to be in that group of elite people. You know, it blows my mind. I don't really feel like I deserve it, but I'm glad I'm there and I'm very thankful.
Well, thank you for all you're doing for the industry and putting these on. You know, when I get the notice, I enjoy grabbing an hour and just kind of listening in and hearing what other people have to say. So
awesome.
Thank you again for asking me to be part of it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you bye.